This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the program, we'll be talking about electronic voting technology. But first, creating new elements. The periodic table of the elements is that chart that's hanging in your classroom. Of course, if you got one with you right now, pull it out. Take a look at that periodic table. Of course, you carry one with you all the time, don't you? If you look at it carefully, you'll notice the gaps. There are spaces. Spaces in the table left there for elements that have not yet been discovered or created. But now a team of scientists from Russia and California announced this week that it's done just that, adding elements 113 and 115 to the periodic table. Their research is published in the current issue of the journal Physical Review C, and they did it how? By smashing a high-energy beam of calcium ions into a target made of the element americium. That's inside a giant particle accelerator, and the lead American author is here to talk about it. Our number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Joshua Patton is a nuclear chemist at the Lawrence Livermore National Lab in Livermore, California. He joins us today from his office. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Tell us where this, let's get situated. Everybody's got their periodic table out now, I'm sure. Give us a little bit of situation. Helium is the lightest element. It's up there in the corner, right? Where do your elements fit in?
Hydrogen's the lightest. It's at the left-hand corner.
Right.
We're situated in the bottom right-hand corner, sort of. And, yeah, we're reaching there, the edge of the highest ones that we've found so far.
And the nature only goes up to what, number 92, which is
exactly.
Is lead?
There have been some remnants of some
uranium?
Heavy isotopes of plutonium also found in nature, but for the most part, uranium is the heaviest one found in nature.
And these elements that you created don't exist in nature.
No, they do not.
Why do I keep seeing news reports that say that you discovered them instead of creating them? I mean, if they existed in nature, you'd say you discovered them. I keep seeing that you discovered these elements.
They're the combination of both. I think discovery in the sense that they've never been seen before is something that was predicted to be there. There are theories that say that some of these heavy elements should be there and we should be able to see them with a sufficient enough half-life so that they're long enough that we could see them, and we've finally found them. So in that sense of, you know, we've discovered them, in addition to having created them.
Tell us why you care to make these elements. Why do you want to fill in these teeth, these missing teeth in the chart?
I'd have to say there's two reasons. First, because there, as you mentioned in the opener, there's holes there. There have been theories that said there could be there, so let's see if we can fill in those gaps. And I think the second reason would be because, again, there are theories that say we're reaching an area where there's enhanced stability with these isotopes of these new elements. And when I say that, I mean that we could find isotopes of these elements with very long half-lives, sufficient enough maybe that if you created enough of these atoms, you know, they'd live a long enough time, you might actually be able to see some of it. So it's an interesting area of the periodic table, as well as the chart of the nucleides, where, you know, there's this increased enhanced stability, and our research, by finding them, is helping prove these theories correct.
How long did these new elements live for?
The element 115 lasted for less than 100 milliseconds, and that decayed to element 113, which lasted for around a second.
A whole second?
Yeah.
That's a pretty long time in this business, is it not?
It is a significant amount of time for the area that we're looking into right now, yeah.
And that's what leads you to believe that there might be this island there that you call of stability where other elements might exist?
True. It's where other isotopes of these elements might have even more stability, even longer half-lives. If we could increase the number of neutrons we could put into these reactions or in these elements, then we would maybe see an enhanced stability and longer lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about how you made them. Well, how do you go about using an atom smasher, as they used to call them, or now a particle accelerator to create these?
You start first with the material. We start with the projectile, which is the calcium 48, which is a highly enriched or has a lot of neutrons in the calcium. It's one of the largest calcium isotopes found in nature. Extremely expensive. You have to purify it, make sure that it's only just the calcium 48. And then you have the target material, which we had here at Lawrence Livermore National Lab, which was americium-243, a particular isotope of americium, which was cleaned again and purified to make sure that decay products and such were taken out. And then we sent the target material over to Russia, where our experiments are take place. They have a device called the cyclotron, which is, what, as you've mentioned, it's a particle accelerator. So they heat up the calcium-48. It gets injected into the cyclotron, which speeds it up and gets it going to really high velocities. And then you use magnets and direct it at the americium target.
Mm-hmm. Did the experiments were also done in Russia? Did they have that kind of accelerator?
Yes, they have the accelerator there in Russia, and the experiments were carried out there, yes.
Mm-hmm. So who gets credit? Both teams here?
Yeah, it's a collaboration together. They have the device, and we supply our expertise in terms of the chemistry involved in the purification of the targets, as well as in the data analysis side.
Mm-hmm. This island of stability that you talk about, what direction, and could you map out a direction it might go on the periodic table, or is it just the isotopes that you're talking about?
It's just the isotopes that I'm talking about. Each of these elements that we've created has the potential to have more isotopes that we haven't seen yet. So in a sense, we could say, if you want to talk about the periodic table, that, you know, we might find long-lived isotopes of element 114, 115, 116. That's what theory has said, and by doing the experiments we've done, we've kind of got an idea that they might be there. But there'd be longer-lived isotopes that we haven't seen of those elements.
Mm. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Justin in South Bend. Hi, Justin.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Okay, I had a question. Do we have any new applications we can use for these two discovered elements?
Currently, no. In the future, we might. But right now, there really is no practical application. First, because they just don't live long enough. And second, we only saw four of these atoms in the course of a month-long experiment running 24 hours a day. So it becomes very difficult to do anything, you know, to even investigate what kind of practical applications they might have. So it's a stepwise process. First we discover them, first we see them, and next we try to figure out a way to create more of them so then we can study the chemistry and to see if they actually fit on the periodic table where they should. And then if you can create even more of them, we start looking at developing practical applications.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. So you only saw four atoms that came out of this. How many particles were bombarded or missed each other or what to get those four?
It was, I think we sent on the order of 1 million calcium 48 ions.
Wow.
At the target. So 10 to the 18th about. And we only saw four atoms of element 115.
And why is that?
It's very difficult when you get to this point of pushing two things with the positive charge that they have, like the calcium 48 nucleus, which has 20 protons, as well as the element 115, or I'm sorry, the americium 243, which has 95 protons. To put that much positive charge together, it takes a significant amount of energy, and even in that, it doesn't happen too often. Another thing you're fighting is, even if you do get the two to fuse together, the majority of the time, that new 115, if that's in fact what it's created, falls apart. There's so much energy inside that when the fusion process takes place that it decides just to fission, and it just separates into two smaller nuclei instead of staying together as the 115. So there's that small probability of it actually surviving the process.
So you
put those factors together and it becomes a really rare process.
But I guess in quantum physics, a small probability can happen.
Yes.
So if you do it enough. Yeah, you do it
enough,
so you get enough of those collisions to happen, something, you'll get four of them out of
exactly
millions and millions and millions and millions of them.
Yes.
And is there a reason why they stay together and don't split apart as quickly, or is it just a matter of chance?
It's just a matter of chance and the probabilities that are involved.
All right, let's get a little more depth into this. Ben in San Francisco. Hi, Ben. Ben, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering how large are the projectiles and the target itself? I mean, you said there were hundreds of millions of, but how big physically, I mean, could we see it? And how far would you be were you sending them? How long the distance that you were shooting them?
The distance isn't that far. I think it's probably only a couple or tens of meters. Size-wise, though, if you had a million of these calcium-48 ions together, if they were just in the atoms, that would be on the order of a couple of micrograms, I want to say. It's a very small quantity. It's still a small quantity, and it'd be very difficult. You might be able to see a little bit of it. We use milligrams of calcium-48 during the experiment, and we're efficient enough to get about, you know, 10 to the 18th of these to actually go down this beam pipe to hit the target. Now, in terms of the americium, again, it's milligrams quantity of americium-243 that we played on through this target. So the target size is actually, you know, maybe the size of a... It's in the shape of a disc. So a big... I think one of the things we used to describe it as would be the one of the old floppy disks. It's a large size floppy disk. One of the old, I think they
five
have
and
an 8-inch size.
Five and
actually,
a
even larger than
no,
that.
The old ones.
Yeah. Right. So, but that's the size of the target wheel, and the target is around the outside of that. So
you're dating yourself now. You know, talking about those old floppy.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a caller or two before we have to go. Barry in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Barry.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi.
Good show as usual. My question was, I've heard a lot about these atom smashers lately. What is the cost of a device like that? And then what does it cost to run an experiment like was just run to find these two elements?
Good question.
That's a really good question. The material is one place to start, and that's fairly expensive. Although, you know, I can only shoot of a number of like maybe 20,000 per milligram or per gram for the calcium-48. Expense-wise for the accelerator and such, I really don't know. It's an expense that I haven't ever had to deal with, but I can assume that it gets fairly costly to run these kinds of experiments.
And you've named these sort of unusual names so far.
Well, we haven't given them any names. The International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry is the one that decides on the names, and they have a method to name elements that are recently discovered or observed for the first time, and so that's why they give them the initials UUT and UUP. If the experiment is ever done again, and someone else sees exactly what we've seen and confirms what we've seen, then our group, our collaboration, will get together and propose a name to this IUPAC, as it's called, this International Union of Pure Applied Chemistry, and then they'll decide.
So it's not going to be patinium or something?
No, no. We don't even think about names. It's a process that, you know, needs to take a while. Seaborgium was discovered in 1971, I believe, and it took, you know, 26 years or 36 years before it was named. It didn't get its name until 1997. Mm-hmm. So it's a process that's going to take some time.
Are you now, I got about 30 seconds left, are you now tweaking it up, going for something else?
We have been working on other experiments. In the past, we've done experiments on element 114 and element 116. We continue to do experiments with those, just trying to increase the number of atoms that we mm-hmm. see. And in the future, we'll probably be shooting for element 117 and 118.
Well, happy hunting, and we'll have you back.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Joshua Patton, nuclear chemist at Lawrence Livermore National Lab in Livermore, California. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about electronic voting machines. Maybe you've been using them. Maybe you are going to be using them. Sooner or later, I think we're all going to be using some form of them. So stay with us. We'll talk about the technology involved.